And it's this little white picket fence. It's this nice little house. And you walk in and everything was all dainty. And I look at him and he goes, shut the fuck up and sit down. Thanks for checking out Party Like a Rockstar podcast. I'm your host, Joel Miller. Today's episode is brought to you by Misha's Kind Foods. They're an LA-based small business making the world's finest non-dairy cheese spreads on the market today. They're delicious and healthy, made from a cashew and almond milk, and blended with various locally sourced fresh herbs, vegetables, and spices. There's no vegetable oils, soy, fillers, starches, or nutritional yeast. It's lactose-free, paleo, keto, kosher perev, and 100% vegan. Enjoy the show. Anyway, let me introduce you guys. So Matt Mills is a lighting designer. He's worked for Three Doors Down, Sammy Hagar, Disturbed, Motley Crue, Avenged Sevenfold, Linkin Park, and Michael Bublé, Motley Crue, Sammy Hagar, and Nelly Furtado. Got a couple ands in there. They didn't signify anything, I promise. In 2012, he won the Top Dog Award for the Lighting Director Operator of the Year for his work with Linkin Park. Aiden Mullen is a guitar tech and stage manager. He's worked for Aaron Lewis, Def Leppard, Peter Frampton, Phil Collins, Tim McGraw, Guns N' Roses, Matchbox 20, Aerosmith, Metallica, Kid Rock, Hall & Oates, Disturbed, Lone Star, Paramore, Taylor Swift, INXS, Eddie Money, Cheap Trick, Lone Star, Diana Carter, and Faith No More. I know I could have cut a few out, but I really like all those guys, so I wanted to read them all. But that's a pretty cool
list. Cheap Trick was the first concert I ever saw.
Really? They're great.
Yeah, so I'm a 80s kid, and they were blowing up on MTV at the time, and there was this nightclub down the road from my parents' house called Playground South in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And I was like 13, 14 years old, snuck out of my parents' house, got on my BMX bike, rode a couple miles to this place, had the money to get in and all that stuff, but it was 18 and over. So me being 14 years old, I couldn't get in. But the guy in the entryway there, he was so cool. He thought it was so cool that I'd cruise down there to see a show. He let me stand in the foyer and I could actually see it and hear it. So
that's neat.
Technically, that was my first concert. Wow. Yeah, pretty cool.
What was your first concert, Aiden?
Montrose. At Winterland in San Francisco.
That's a damn cool concert.
yeah, it was. It was a game changer. I was 14, I want to say, and I was hanging out with some family friends that were older than me, and headed into San Francisco in my friend's Volkswagen party bus, and sat. Back then, Winterland was in a pretty sketchy area. I don't know if you guys are familiar.
The Tenderloin. No, yes. No. Is it?
No.
No, I'm thinking of
Post and Steiner, corner of Post and Steiner.
Okay.
My great grandmother lived in a retirement home right across the street. I always thought that was funny.
Yeah.
But the thing to do would be to show up there early in the afternoon and sit in line. It was a GA kind of a proscenium stage venue. I think 5,000 seats, maybe tops, might be smaller. But it classic. I saw some amazing shows in that place. But, you know, we go and get somebody to buy us some Tuborg Gold and go to a Togo sandwich joint, get some sandwiches and sit in line all afternoon and get right up there on the barricade, you know. And,
yeah.
And, that's how I saw my first show with Montrose. And I saw Boston there the night they headlined for the first time, ran out of material, played More Than a Feeling again because the crowd wouldn't leave. Some really cool shows in that venue.
Yeah, it is cool. Yeah, some of these venues, they speak, you know, I wrote a book. So in my book, I talk about, I can't remember the name of it, but it's the Tabernacle in Atlanta. Did you guys ever work there?
Oh, yeah.
The fucking building was like, I say in the book that the building was part of the show, but it's because the damn building was ready to fall down. The whole thing would move so much. It was a cool venue.
I remember working a show there, I want to say 1984, and then seeing a show there shortly thereafter, and I couldn't tell you which was which and who it was.
Yeah. Neat. Some of these venues, Jones Beach, such a beautiful place to be. I mean, you know, Santa Barbara Bowl.
Unless you're working. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I didn't really do a lot of work. I was pretty lazy, roadie. Anyway, I got a little fun one for you. So I've had some guys on recently who know you guys pretty good. And one of them was Mr. Batty and Kevin Walsh. And he wrote to me and he's like, you got to bring up to Aiden where I ran into him in the elevator. And I'm like, I promise I'll bring it up.
Yeah. I can't remember where it was, but yeah, the elevator door opened and there he was. And if I'm not mistaken, drink in hand, he was, I couldn't tell you. I wonder what year it was. He'd know.
He wrote me all the details, but I didn't write them down. He was telling me he was out with who you were out with. I'm like, how do you remember all this stuff?
Company. Yeah. I don't remember who I was with. I remember him being with Bad Company. I don't remember who I was with. It might've been Matchbox or somebody like that.
I can cheat and look it up if it matters. Yeah, I was out with the Cranberries and we were somewhere in this. I think we were in the States. And one of the ladies on the tour was a lesbian lady. And the elevator door, she came in the next day and she was pretty hungover. And I was kind of like, what did you do last night? Because she wasn't one to hang out with all of us. She did her own thing. And she was like, it was kind of crazy story. She's like, so I ran into my first boyfriend in the elevator here. Well, she was from New Zealand. So it was a whole thing of like, wow, what are the odds of that? I'm like, and I thought you were a lesbian. She's like, shut the fuck up. You know, it's great. Yeah, I thought you were, but what are the odds, you know, in an elevator in a different country? So
yeah, no, that's how it happens, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But what Batty had written is it was just like, what was so cool about this industry is that you would run into somebody, you know, in a different country in the elevator. So I don't know. He was all proud about it. I like that guy. He always has fun stuff to say. All right, here we go.
I think the coolest moment like that I have, like for some reason, South Africa was open for business during that little time frame and everybody was flying in there to do festivals and whatnot. And I was flying in from Australia and my buddies in Evanescence, Lawrence Upton and Mike Cooper, they were flying in from South America going straight and we were kind of meeting over there and we didn't know that we each other were going there. And, you know, everybody gets settled and finds the nearest bar or whatever. And head into the bar and I see them at the end. I'm like, I'd like to buy those two gentlemen a drink down there. And they had idea I was going to be there. They had, you know, I had no idea they were going to be there. Just cool how that happens, you know, of all the places, just, you know, in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Those are the ultimate windups where you're, I ran into a couple of people from high school and I was in a train station in Italy. I was on my way to see Pompeii and I look like a bum. I wasn't touring. Otherwise I'd look more like a bum, but I was backpacking as a kid and I had a full beard. I had mud in my hair. I mean, I look like a homeless person. And I walked up to them. They didn't even know who I was. I'm like, it's Joel from high school. And they're like, whoa. And it was neat.
So with exotic locations too, that you run into people. You don't run into them in like, you know, Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's always, you know, on the way to Pompeii or on the way to Johannesburg, you know?
So Batty had written here that he saw you in 1995. He was with Bad Company.
Wow.
He had loaded out a couple of rooms in a nearby hotel. And he hadn't seen you in 5 to 6 years. He doesn't say who you were out with.
How does he remember that shit?
I don't know. You were out with Eddie Money. No. He just finished 95. A show playing with Eddie Money.
Yes. Yes.
See?
Yes. Yeah. And he introduced me. How did that go? He introduced me to Simon Kirk that night, which was pretty extraordinary. I was a Bad Company fan when I was a younger chap. Still am. But yeah. That would have been, 95,
I love listening to Bad Company still.
Oh, man, yeah.
I don't want to say it's just his voice. It's not fair to the rest of the band or whatever, but I love Shooting Stars. Still totally dig it, you know? I know what's going to happen at the end of the song. When it's a story, you know, you still like it. It says a lot. So and then
great
I had
story,
a
story, you know?
It is
and,
a great
and they're super tight, you know, all the way around, you know? Yeah. Great band.
Yeah.
And then I had Chad Olick on last night, but we had nothing good to say about you guys, so I won't. I won't bring him up.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm gonna go into some random stuff for you. So I was talking to somebody the other day. We were at the bar. I know, deep stretch. And they said, "Do you remember the air bars that they had for a few minutes, where they'd sell you oxygen that had flavors to it?"
Sure.
Oh God. Yeah. There's some new ridiculous flavor of the week like that, you know, all the time, you know, it's like,
but I had completely forgotten it. It had completely escaped my memory. I was in, I only did it once. I was with, I think I was either in Las Vegas at a swimming pool, or I was with Guns N' Roses in Rio de Janeiro at Rock and Rio. And I can't remember which
place. You actually tried it.
Yeah, because everybody else was doing it. But, you know, I don't smoke cigarettes in my life. So, yeah. Or hookah never been my thing. So I just remember like tasting strawberry going like, I feel like Rainbow Bright's boyfriend right now. I'm like, I don't know what's the point of this shit? I don't know. But I remember looking for is when they had all the Jamba Juices pop up, you know, so now we're talking way back. And like, when are they going to start making these where they stick booze in there and you go pick them up?
Right.
Yeah.
There's another one. I got my start in the rave scene way back in the day, not the EDM scene, the techno and rave scene and all that stuff. And there'd be these bars that would serve, it was something smart, like Smart Juice or something like that. And all it was like a smoothie, but they had everybody convinced that if they drank that, they would trip harder. And people were just drinking it right and left, but it was just like a smoothie. It was nothing. I forget the name of it, but it had like a, you know, smart blah, blah, blah. And it led you to believe that you're going to go on this euphoric trip from drinking this thing.
What was it? Brando has electrolytes.
Yeah, it was very much like that. Like everybody's lined up for it. I'm like, what is this? This is nothing.
To me, it was Red Bull, man. I don't know if Red Bull still has the same presence at shows that they did, but in the early 90s, or no, the late 90s, they were, the girls were at every show, if you remember, and they were giving you Red Bulls like nobody's business. It was a brilliant marketing scheme. I assume it worked well, but I hated the smell of that crap.
Yeah.
It's one of those health issues from drinking it, you know?
I don't do caffeine. So I don't know, not my thing. They'd like, here, take a pallet. And be like, nope, keep it.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know, and then Monster, I guess, kind of took over that, didn't they?
Monster really, I think, won the game. Monster got really, really big. And, but again, I just don't like the smell. I don't know. It bothers me. But if you get into it,
We did a thing, you know, that we were known for having some fun, you know, with the Def Leppard crew. And at one point, I want to say, 2005, maybe, we got a Monster deal where they would show up at venues, you know, and offload pallets of that shit, you know, and gave us refrigerators. We had one on either side of the stage. So it would be drinking, you know, sugar-free Monster drinks or whatever it would be during the day, you know, maybe a triple espresso or a triple latte from Starbucks at, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning, a couple of those Monsters, and then knocking the edge off it at the end of the night with some Irish whiskey, man. And I'll tell you do that long enough, it'll lead to...
Yeah, it can't be good for you.
No.
I was terrible. I don't know. Somebody... So when I was out with STP, I did the 4 album. Nobody had changed the rider, I think is what it was. So they had Yoo-hoo on there. So every day we were putting Yoo-hoo in the bus, but nobody was drinking the Yoo-hoo. It was just shoving it in the bottom of the bus and nobody changed the rider. So I decided to try a Yoo-hoo one day and I'm like, this is great. And so I kept it really quiet because I didn't want everybody else to know that these Yoo-hoo things tasted awesome. And so I started drinking Yoo-hoo, I don't know, 6-10 of them a day. And then somebody's like, what are you drinking all day? I'm like, oh no. And then everybody started drinking Yoo-hoo.
Oh, that can't be good for me either.
No, it's crap too. It's just sugar. What do you say, Matt?
We're going through the old rider stuff on Sammy Hagar right now. Me and the front of house guy, you know, all of a sudden there will be a cooler show. We're like, Perrier for you? No, for you? No. So we're like trying to figure out going, this has got to be old shit. We got to update this. And like, then we won't do a show for 2 months. And then we'll be like, oh yeah, we still got to update that crap. So we get Perrier at front of house on Sammy Hagar, of all things.
Funny. Yeah, on STP, there was tons of stuff and nobody cared. It was just towels and water. That's all the guys cared about. Everything else was, nobody looked, nobody knew. I don't remember what else there was, though. I remember I started calling around. I was like, you know, Ray-Ban, let's get some Ray-Bans. Let's do this, let's do that. And I was just calling around to see what I could get.
Now, back to the marketing thing with the Red Bull and all that. Few of the Disturbed tours I did, it was the Rockstar Mayhem tour as a pull up with a pallet full of stuff. But the only water that we got on tour was in a Rockstar energy drink can. It was just water, but it looked like all the roadies all day long were drinking Rockstar Energy.
Wow. Huh.
Which a lot of people
and you couldn't buy that on the open market. That was something specifically made.
No, it was just for that because it said it was just like the basic generic, you know, black and gold can, and a lot of people didn't like it. But I ended up seeing something good in it because it was an aluminum can and it's in this, you know, big garbage can of ice and water and all that. It stayed colder longer because the metal held the cold. So.
That's an interesting one. I wonder what they thought. You know what? They probably had them for their corporate events for their own people or something, and they gave you them. But yeah, I mean, wonder.
It's probably not that hard because you always hear, like, if there's a hurricane that happens or whatever, you know, Budweiser will send out pallets of Budweiser, but it's only water. You know, they just, you know, they keep out the fun stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
Clever.
Indeed. Matt, what are Follow Me systems?
Follow Me is an automated follow spot system, which essentially you hang a camera up, say on your downstage truss, looking at your stage, and up come some calibration points. You say, you know, it's this many feet that way, this many feet that way. You tell it how big the box that you're playing in is, basically the stage. Then you add targets, which is literally a crosshair, and you need one for each performer you want to follow. And then you tell it what fixtures are going to be in the mix sometimes and all that. You got to tell it, you know, in a 3D world where those fixtures are. And then what's awesome is the LD at any point in time can say fixture 101 through 110, go to target one. And all those guys will follow target one. Or, you know, you could have like only one light, or you could have all the lights do it, you know, and you can split them up. And then whenever they're not following somebody, the moving lights can go back to being a regular moving light.
That's some amazing technology.
It is. It's so neat to hear this stuff now where people have put so much ingenuity and ingenuity into all of the parts of everything now. I love it.
Yeah, it's funny. For a while, I was renting a system to, what's that guy's name? Keith is his LD. Anyway, big country guy. I'll think of it here in a little bit. They call him Peaches because he's from Georgia. Jason Aldean.
Oh, yeah.
So I was renting to him for a while. And when they first tried it, they're like, we're just going to use it as backlight. Like, but they were still having follow spots out front. I'm like, okay, but you know, it does more than this. Then they rented it from me the next tour. They're like, okay, we're going to use it as front light now too. I'm like, nah, that's cool, man. Okay, cool. You got two lights on each guy now. That's cool. And then towards the end of it, Keith sent me a picture of 100 Sharpies following him around, like just pinpointed, ding, just following him around the stage. So, you know, they were like kind of getting deeper and deeper into the deep end, you know, as they understood it more than they were really having fun with it.
Yeah, you got to get the hang of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. All right. Got another tangent one for you guys. So I was talking to somebody the other day and we were talking about, you ever go to get your teeth cleaned? And it's not the dentist, but it's the, what are they called where they clean your teeth? The technician?
Hygienist.
Dental hygienist. This is tough because I'm English, so we have such bad teeth. And my teeth are actually fake. So I'm confiding in you guys. But isn't it funny how the dental hygienist always tries to have these deep conversations with you while you got your mouth open? The argument was they do it every day, so they totally understand everything you're saying when you go rrr. Rrr. Like, no.
I would imagine that they do. I mean, maybe, you know, after you hear it so long.
Yeah. Problem is understanding what they're saying when you're listening to the you know, and all that other shit going on.
I just think it's such a strange time to start having a conversation with me.
Yeah.
I don't know what to talk to them about.
What drives me crazy is when I have people out to a show or whatever, and they want to carry on a conversation while the band's going on. And I'm like, I cannot hear a word you're saying. I'm like, uh-huh, yeah. I mean, they could ask me to sign over my house to them or something. I'm like, uh-huh, yeah, no problem, man, cool.
That's me everywhere, hence the hearing aid stuff.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, though.
Well, that now I have earplugs in on top of it, you know, so I'm like, I cannot hear a word you're saying.
When I was single, though, and I was going out on – well, any dates, it was funny because the ladies would chat and you're, oh wow, oh, oh, And they all think you're they think you're great because you're so intrigued with everything they say. And then at the end, it'd be like, you don't remember? It was like a week ago. And we had this conversation. Totally remember. Of course. Yeah, dude. Yeah. You don't know anything of what they're talking about anyway.
No, I do that
a lot. The other thing that kills me is we meet so many people day in and day out, whenever we're normally traveling and all that. And, you know, there'll be some random stagehand from somewhere that just happened to remember me from last year, or he was a follow spot that day or something like that. And he's like, "Oh, Matt, how you been, man? Oh, it's so good to see you again." And I'm like just going through my head going, "Holy shit, is this somebody I've been friends with forever that I don't know? I don't remember this guy. Holy shit, I feel like an asshole." And it was just a local stagehand that I had, you know, interacted with like, you know, 10 minutes out of the day, you know?
See, there's a few though. So I think it was Bobby Schneider and Bob Dates. Do you remember that guy at Pine Knob and he had the big beaver tail hair that went all the way? Remember
that? There's certain ones you do absolutely remember.
Yeah. And then
you know he doesn't have that anymore, right?
So that was the conversation, and he cut it all off. And I'm like, what did he do with it?
He totally reintroduced himself to us. Like, yeah, you probably remember me with the dread that was all ugly. And I guess that he got in some trouble with the law, and the judge said, kind of in a roundabout way, if you cut your hair and look like a decent human being, you know, you can walk, something of that nature.
Oh, what and a so crappy way to have to cut your hair. You know, that kind of guy should have got like, what was it? Gillette wanted to give each guy in ZZ Top $1 million to shave their beard. Remember? So that guy deserved the gaff tape company. I don't know, whoever makes gaff tape for roadies, they should have given him some money to cut his hair. Something.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of Gillette. Like anytime somebody says Gillette or something like that, it reminds me of this corporate show that I did with them. And this is how fucked up things are, okay? All right. So they were going through, oh, sales are expected to be this high, blah, 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 typical corporate meeting. And they go, now we're going to bring out our R&D division to, you know, detail, you know, what they've been doing and all that and how they spent their budget this year, basically. And they spent like over $1 million trying to figure out how to make, I believe it was the Mach 3 blades that were coming out. Like that was a big new razor. Trying to figure out how to make the Mach 3 so it would not last more than 3 or 4 shaves before you had to replace the cartridge.
Come on, really?
Yeah.
Yes.
What a bummer.
Because think about how expensive those things are, you know, and the turnaround on those things. They want you, you know, swapping those things out.
Wow.
Yeah, corporate greed.
It's well, remember the light bulb story? We have light bulbs that will last 100 years, but we can't sell them. Tires, we can make tires that will last forever, but no.
And obsolescence.
I just wonder if there's any truth to it because there's so many people needing so much stuff. Who cares? You know, there'll all be the next guy who's getting a new car and needs the tires because of blah. You know, I don't know. I don't know. But the other side is, I guess it's nice to get new stuff every now and then. Keep everybody in business too. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the Gillette stuff,
you know, that was just real shady when they gave that presentation. I'm like, you motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Bad Gillette. Bad.
Yeah.
Wonder if they're getting clobbered. Who owns Gillette? Is there a parent company?
I think Gillette.
Is it them?
Yeah.
Because I always like Johnson & Johnson stuff. Johnson & Johnson was interesting because they basically focused on stuff that we use. They're consumables. To me, that was so smart. You know, toilet paper comes, toilet paper goes. Need new toilet paper. Same with the Gillette idea. But even if they kept their razor around, what was the longest you would keep your razor anyway? I don't think it would be that long.
No.
Till I could afford
it. I mean, my favorite razor that I use anyways is a disposable that, I mean, I'll use it for a good week, though. And it's just like some off brand that I happen to use one time. I'm like, hey, this is perfect.
Yeah, I'm like I'm American Indian looking guy. This is months and months. It doesn't grow. I don't know. I don't have to do nothing. So it's
good. I also found out. So like way back when I got married, instead of having a bachelor party, because how are you going to have a bachelor party that tops a roadie's life? So I told my friends, we're just going to go have a gentleman's day. We're going to go shoot guns. We're going to get haircuts and straight shaves and all that stuff. And the barber we went to, he was the guy for the state of Florida that signs off on everybody's exam for being a barber or a beautician or whatever. And he was telling us, not to ever waste money on shaving cream or any of that aftershave stuff or anything like that, that it's just conditioner. It's just Carnauba wax. And sure enough, ever since then, I just use whatever conditioner my wife has bought, and that's what I've been shaving with ever since.
See, that's marriage for you, all these learning lessons. You wouldn't have had conditioner without the wife.
No.
See, I got no hair, and I wear, I got no hair either, so I hand soap, I don't know, whatever, it don't matter. I just don't want to stain the pillow when I go to sleep because the girlfriend get pissed off with me. Those are good pillows. That's how she talks too. Those are good. So, all right, I'm going to take a step back. So you guys are 14 years old. You went to these awesome concerts. You had a good time. You clearly liked music. I would assume pretty safely that it had an influence on what you wanted to do with your life. But when did you guys begin to start working in the industry, and what were the moments that kind of catapulted you?
Well, growing up in Jacksonville, we had every 80s act that rolled through there.
Do you know Maxie Williams?
What's that?
Do you know Maxie Williams?
Okay. Yeah. But I didn't meet him for till years later, whenever I was working with Three Doors and he was over at the Hard Rock in Biloxi.
I just assume anybody there from Jacksonville knows each other. Sorry.
we typically we do, but.
Okay. You know, right. Here's a crawfish. Oh, yeah. Anyway.
So, you know, I'm walking away from my camera for a second, but I'm still involved in the conversation. I'm just finding that this isn't doing it.
Yeah, so, no problem. Sure.
Go get something else while I'm listening. Okay.
No problem. Yep. Thanks, Aiden.
Yeah. So, you know, 14, 15 or whatever. That's, you know, when the height of 80s metal, you know, Rat was rolling through, Motley Crue, Poison, all those bands. And, you know, it was popular enough that all the girls were going there as well, wearing spandex. And, you know, that was around the time that I was really, you know, having fun with girls and whatnot, you know, as I was maturing and all that. And so I was going to every show, even if it was like something stupid, like Trickster or something, you know, just cause there was women there.
Yeah.
And, I always noticed the lighting, like the production. I had no idea how the hell it worked or anything like that, you know, but I always noticed it. And then, you know, fast forward to after I had like become a mechanic, I went to school and became a mechanic, but there was this new nightclub opening in town.
Car mechanic?
Huh? Yeah.
My dad was a car mechanic. Anyway.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And there was this chain of clubs that opened up in Jacksonville called The Edge. And I realized that the guy, like, had a decent light system for the time and all that. And I stood behind the guy after opening night. I'm like, this guy's just pushing buttons on that. Then it changes the way everything does stuff. I could do that. And then I also kind of put two and two together that this guy also probably lived at where another location was and wanted to get out of there as soon as possible. So the next time I was at the club, I struck up a conversation with him and kind of said, yeah, man, I can do this, you know, just do this to the beat and all that. And he was so anxious to get the hell out of there that he gave me a job, you know, and I was probably 21, 22, making $50 a night, all the, you know, cash, all the beer I could drink, as many of my friends I could get in as possible.
Great gig.
And I just kind of learned that way by poking at it and going, oh, so if I do this, then it does this. And
Aiden, you can, Aiden, if you can ask him what he was poking at, please.
I don't know why, but for some reason, it's always made sense to me. Like, I've always just somehow understood it. And I started working in a couple different nightclubs in Jacksonville, then went on a Disney vacation with an old girlfriend of mine and saw the same kind of lights that I was using in the clubs, but a shitload of them. I'm like, holy shit, they use the same stuff I got. I know how to do this. And I sent a very embellished resume down to Disney, and they didn't hire me right away, but they kicked me over to House of Blues, who did hire me. And that's really how I got started. And it was seriously like, you know, sink or swim. They threw me in the deep end, and fortunately I was able to swim.
That's great.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Yeah.
You didn't want to work for the mouse anyway.
I did for a little bit though.
Oh, you know, I went to a stand-up event, and the MC of the event was, God, what's his name? Dick Van Dyke.
No kidding. Nice.
And he was funny, and he's an old fella, you know, but he got up there pretty limber for an old guy, way better, pretty limber. I mean, very limber for an old guy. Yeah. but he had like a 35-year-old, 40-year-old wife or something. But he gets up on the stage and he was awesome. And one comedian decided to pick on the mouse. So all the jokes were about Disney. Here's a guy sitting here who's a significant amount of his career, a portion of his career, any way you want to word it, was related to Disney.
Yeah.
And he was so, the best part of the night for me was watching his reaction, which was a courteous smile that didn't agree with what you were saying. And everything was in that smile. And I'm like, that's acting. I mean, nobody could take a picture of him and put it up on YouTube to make him look like an asshole. Because, but at the same time, he was being polite as the MC of the event. Wow, you're good. It was so neat to see. It was so neat. And then he came up after, and it couldn't have been anything written out for him. He started ragging on the comedian. He was ripping him apart. He was way funnier, and it was spur of the moment. But it was sort of like, you know, mess with my family? And I mean, it was very cool. It was very, very neat. Totally nice. Unexpected. Yeah, it was really neat.
Old school comedian slash actors from that genre, man. They were all about spur of the moment.
You know? Had to be on your toes. If you listen to the Sid Caesar type stuff with Mel Brooks talking about everything was quick.
Yeah. The original, you know, like the original Dean Martin roasts and those kind of things, man.
They're so good. If you go back and you watch some of it, which is easily accessible thanks to YouTube, you realize how super smart their comedy was. And I'm all about the speed aspect of how quick you can come up with things because I'm unable to do it. So I'd love the idea that I was friendly with Phyllis Diller before she passed away. My girlfriend, the first date we went on 10 years ago now was I took her to meet Miss Diller. And so we went to her house and what was, it was neat to go around with her because even at 90 years old at the time or whatever she was, I think 90 years old, she was still so very sharp.
Yeah. Yeah. Must have been kind of like going to brunch with Betty White or something like that. You know, you never know what's going to come out of it.
That'd be cool.
What was neat is you never know who'd be hanging out. So it would be like, so who's the old lady with the walker? It's Carol Channing, Joel.
No, okay.
I don't know who that is. Jesus Christ. You know, and then they'd give you a tutorial about who the hell Carol Channing was. You'd be like, wow, she was cool.
And yeah, I'm old enough to know who all those people are, you know.
Oh, I met Tippi Hedren through her. And then there's a lady named Terry Moore who was in a film I did. And through Terry, I met so many of these older ladies. And it was fun. You know, the thing I liked about the old guard of these ladies, they were all married like 18 times. And there's no reason for them to be friendly with you other than they enjoy your company. That's nice. That says something. And I always appreciated it that I'd be the guy to hang out. You know, Joel came over and he fixed my light bulb. you just take the bulb out and you put, he came in and did it. I mean, in other words, they don't care. They don't know how to do it. Terry Moore, she married Howard Hughes and she was nominated for an Oscar in 1958. She's 100 years old now. She was Marilyn Monroe's acting coach.
Wow.
Yeah, she was in Lassie when she was 12 years old. She's the girl in Mighty Joe Young. I managed her for 5 minutes, which is why I know all this stuff. But she really didn't know how to change a light bulb because since 12 years old, she'd been in the studio system. She wasn't anything she knew. But then other stuff definitely made up for these things, the shortcomings, I guess you could say. She told me about baking cookies with John Wayne. he was a good baker, you know, and you're kind of listening like, what a random story. Fun, stupid stuff. What's the most random stories you guys have heard from rock stars? I don't know. Is it baking cookies?
I really have any.
It's pretty random question. I don't know. That's a tough one.
David Draymond was talking about how he owned a castle.
Who?
The singer from Disturbed, once he got his money and all that, for some reason he felt he had to buy a castle over in Europe.
Did he buy one?
I don't know if he ever sold that or not.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
So he actually bought one.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that I can see that happening.
The problem is it's not buying the castle. It's the upkeep of keeping it going. And then who needs all that hassle? So, but I could totally see David being into that. I did stuff with Chad, actually. Chad was on the tour with me. Chad was mixing monitors.
Yeah.
It was fun. The Disturbed guys were really cool. I go into it, but they were on the television for MTV. And I was all, I thought STP was the greatest band ever. And so we're watching it and they're on there. And I, Charlie Hernandez was my boss. And I looked at Charlie. I'm like, it's just amazing the bullshit today, you know, these crappy bands and whatever. And I remember Charlie, like, you know, you be careful what you say, cause you never know who you work for. You need to learn to shut the fuck up sometimes. So I was like, yeah. You know, and, I think a week later it's announced like Disturbed's opening up for us. And I'm like, whoa, shit. You know, Charlie's a prophet. When the truth is he probably knew already.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, there's that too. Yeah.
Yeah. But I, and then after the first show, oh, I was a total fan. I thought they were great because they were fun to watch. Super nice guys.
Yeah.
Super nice guys. So every day I'd dress up as a Grim Reaper and I'd go and I'd fry David before the show started in the electric chair. I mean, we had a good talk. I liked the guy a lot. He was a very nice guy.
Yeah, me too.
I remember when I first heard Down With A Sickness, when it first came out on radio, I'm like, oh, that's cool. Hope they enjoy that 15 minutes because that shit ain't going to last long.
And yeah, well.
Here we are.
Right? Yep.
I can beat you. I listened to Linkin Park because I knew the drummer. Wow. And I thought they sucked. I thought the demo was garbage, but the guy kind of pissed me off, to be honest. So I was already not so happy with the dude. And I'm like, yeah, I ain't going nowhere. Oops. Right. Little wrong on that front. Yeah. Oh, well.
I've been pretty crotchety the majority of my career. There's a lot of stuff that I don't like, you know, a lot of stuff that I do like that people make fun of me for.
I probably like the stuff you do like. Who do you like? I like, you know, folk.
I come from my background is strongly 70s music. I'm the Lynyrd Skynyrd fan. I'm the Doobie Brothers fan. I'm the Montrose fan. I'm a Sammy Hagar fan. He's one of my favorites. But while my friends were listening to Hendrix and Led Zeppelin, I was listening to Boston and Styx.
Okay.
For some reason, I gravitated towards the more melodic type of 70s rock. And even the Eagles, never saw the Eagles, but love them.
It's so fucked up. The problem with the Eagles is I can't get the Big Lebowski out of my head for the rest of my life. And every time they come on, I'm like, hate the Eagles, man. Like, it's part of the song for me. Anything. I just...
Well, growing up in the Bay Area for me was extraordinary. You know, that was the Bill Graham era, you know, even later on. But, you know, the 60s thing, nothing there for me, nothing at all, not even remotely interested. But the venues and the shows, the compilation of different artists were, you go through all the Fillmore posters, you know, and you see these bands that played together on a Tuesday night or, you know, everybody, the Bay Area bands, the Tubes, Journey when they were before Steve Perry. I cut my teeth on Journey way before Steve Perry joined that band, back when they were a progressive band, you know, just some crazy, crazy stuff. So that's where I come from musically. And, you know, my friends are like, dude, you gotta, you know, you don't like Jimi Hendrix. And it wasn't that I didn't like Jimi Hendrix. It was just noisy to me, if you can imagine. And I don't know if I should actually admit that in a public forum, but that kind of music to me, it was atonal. It just wasn't slick enough, you know? But, you know, cutting my teeth at that Montrose show for me, that kind of hard rock, but melodic, not necessarily commercial, but just properly polished, properly produced, you know, and that's kind of where I came from the whole time, you know.
You know, it's Steve Perry. I love that the music video for his, what is it? Oh, Sherry or whatever.
Oh,
and he's sitting by himself on the steps, you know,
Yeah.
It should have been gone. And I'm kind of looking, I'm like, what's he doing sitting by himself on the steps?
Yeah.
You know, why don't he get up and talk to people? He's Steve Perry. Yeah. He can say hi. And it was, I wonder like who wrote all these music videos, you know? And he's like, so what do you want me to do? You want me to just sit by myself on the school steps? Yep. Just sit there by yourself and just sing. Yeah. Okay.
We'll get the point across somehow.
Okay.
And I saw his first Bay Area show with Journey.
Oh, that's actually very cool.
Concord Pavilion.
Okay, so you're a big Journey fan, and they've got a new singer guy, and you're going to go, you're excited to check out the new singer guy, and then just knocks your socks off, or were you kind of like, who's this asshole?
No, it was who's this asshole, basically, is what it was. It was a group of us that were diehard Journey fans, I saw them every time they played in the Bay Area from 75 onward, I think. And it was, okay, so who's this clown and why is he singing in our band, basically, you know? And we went with the intention of hating him and walked away with the jaw hanging open, you know, because he came out and owned it from the minute he walked on stage.
Yeah. And,
you know, Infinity was such an amazing record in so many ways. But it was extraordinary to see the presence that he came out with, and he changed that band for better, for worse, depending on who you ask. You know, there's a lot of people that have opinions, strong opinions. But back then that band was, they were just a force to be reckoned with, man.
You're a big Journey fan, Matt?
I wouldn't say a big fan, but I mean, I certainly enjoy their music. You know, I mean, I don't think I own any of their stuff on my iPhone or anything, but you know,
see, I was like, loading him up. If he gets a Journey phone call tomorrow, he'd be like, whew, glad I didn't say shit about those guys.
Yeah.
They do tour a lot. Like, be careful.
as you know, my kids are hearing this stuff on the radio and stuff like that, you know, like Don't Stop Believing comes on. I'm like, you kids are going to hear this for the rest of your lives. Like, what are you talking about? Like, trust me, this is one of those timeless songs.
I just think of Vision Quest. Remember the wrestling movie?
Yep.
I do remember.
There was another one too, wasn't there? What was the other movie that was in? Wasn't it
The Shrek Sopranos?
Was it?
That's how the Sopranos ended with Don't Stop Believing.
And I thought it was in a Shrek movie as well.
Everything's in a Shrek movie. Them and Neil Diamond. Neil Diamond goes back to Journey. Right. I don't know.
Yeah. Saw Neil Diamond back then too.
Neil Diamond was fun. That's the only show I've been to like in 10 years. I'm not a big concert goer anymore. And Neil Diamond was awesome.
Yeah, I saw him in 1976.
So they were saying what's funny is all the stuff he says now is like the same stuff he said in 1976. He hasn't changed nothing. But it was neat because we happened to be sitting next to his mother. And and he goes, you know, this was my first number one hit. It's named after my mom. And she's up there. And she was in a wheelchair. She's an old lady. And I'm like, how cool is it in life to be like, I wrote this number one hit for my mom and she's listening to it right now.
That is cool.
It was neat. And then he goes, and Coming to America came on and he goes, and this is a picture of my grandmother. And I wrote this for her because she was coming to America. And you're just kind of thinking like, this guy's incredible. It takes it to a whole new realm of understanding. You're writing about your family members. And this is a song that I know inside and I'm very, very neat. Great guy. Yeah. Incredible artist, performer, writer, brilliant man.
Yeah.
Good show.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I grew up as well. It was my mom's favorite. And so it was always on in the house. And, you know, once I started touring internationally and all that, I was in Brisbane, Australia for a day off. And I was looking at the map and seeing what's around, what I should go do and all that. And I see this place called Surfers Paradise, just a short train ride away. I'm like, I got the day off. I'm going to Surfers Paradise and I'm going surfing. And I did. And then on my way back in, you know, still covered with, you know, salt from the sea and from the ocean and all that, you know, running my production manager in the lobby of the hotel as I'm walking in, he's like, what are you up to, Matt? I'm like, oh, I'm just getting back from Surfers Paradise. What are you up to? Like, I'm heading out to go see Neil Diamond. You want to go? I'm like, yes, I do. Yeah. And just turned right around with him, like off to Neil Diamond, you know, and it was fantastic.
So who does mom like better, Tom Jones or Neil Diamond?
Ooh.
I'd never heard Tom Jones at my house.
Wow.
I only heard Neil Diamond.
Wow.
Oh, I love me some Tom Jones.
Both in my house.
Yeah.
Both in my house. And my dad was a crooner. My dad was from Ireland. He passed away 2 years ago.
Sorry.
But my dad, I got to say, I got to brag on him for a minute. He was one of the most popular crooners in Ireland.
What was your father's name?
Louis Mullen.
Yeah, that's pretty cool sounding. I like it.
And he, the Bing Crosby style, Nat King Cole style of crooner, you know. He did gigs, man. He was popular. He was the bomb back in the late 50s in Ireland.
It's so neat too, because if you go into, I mean, everybody knows it, but you go into any Irish pub, that band is going to be incredible.
Well, hell yeah.
I just actually released the episode today. It was the Black Irish Band, and they play great stuff. You would like them.
Oh, wow.
Squeeze box, banjo. They're a California band, but they're playing all these old Irish gigs, maritime, real fun stuff.
Yeah,
they're a local band, but they're retired firemen who have this band, and they're really good. It's great fun. They're cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's neat.
So I grew up with Tom Jones and Neil Diamond on my mom's side.
So would your dad play in the house? Like he'd take out his.
He was a singer. So he didn't play. Sing, and he sang all the time. He sang all the time.
Love it.
I was surrounded by that music. Everything, you know, from, I've still got his old records in a box here in the house. But that's just cool. Some amazing melodies, you know, but mostly primarily Bing Crosby was the voice in the house.
He was the biggest artist of the 40s or the 30s? I think the 40s, right?
40s, I would imagine the 40s.
Yeah. But he was the biggest name of the 40s. It was interesting. I'm a memorabilia dealer, and I had some Bing Crosby stuff and couldn't get rid of it. And he was the biggest name of the era, and nobody cared. That was nuts.
Yeah, I had music in the house from the time I was only wee, you know. I grew up around it. And
see, I think that's neat. I didn't. My parents weren't, they weren't listening to music ever. So
that was my life.
And I grew up across the street from Angelo from Fishbone. I don't know if you guys ever did Fishbone gigs. And so Angelo is there.
But I've seen plenty of Fishbone shows.
Very colorful character, Mr. Angelo. So he's kind of like my older brother. And I would go across the street and I would listen to him jamming, and you never knew who was going to be there. And it was cool. He was neat. I thought that guy was really neat. My first tour, the opening band was Angelo with a Fishbone. So it kind of worked out this nice way, but you got to get it from somewhere. I don't know. Your mother was your big influence musically, Matt.
Early on, yes. And then MTV took over, basically.
Yeah.
Like I was.
And then they started doing reality, and you moved back to your mom's mom again. My mom did. My mom helped. She told me start Simon and Garfunkel, and Santana. She liked, and so I went out and got those, and I liked Simon and Garfunkel a lot more. And so I started going down this road of folk, and then I found out about a guy named Townes Van Zandt. Actually, it was Nancy Griffith who introduced me to Townes Van Zandt, and then from there, oh God, I was in heaven. I loved all that stuff. But it's still, I think, what makes music neat for everybody is that you get a record, CD, it keeps changing, but you know you can listen to that again, and you really liked it the first time. And it just makes music so cool.
and the second time, and the 10th time, and the 100th time.
I used to buy stuff because the artwork was cool, you know? Like, that's, we would get that, and we'd open it up. There'd be like a story to be told, and we'd listen to it, you know?
Journey had great album covers.
Yeah. That was, anytime a new record came out, you know, got on the bike and rode down to Hal's Music Center, you know, and had to get it. You know, you got your photographs and all the lyrics are in there, and they tell who's involved and what they do and how they do it. Now you're lucky to know anything at all about it. But that was huge for me growing up, was learning, you know, who did what and how and why.
Have either of you worked for a band that you listened to all the time when you were kids?
I mean, I've heard plenty of Sammy Hagar, you know, growing up, you know, whether it's Montrose or his solo stuff or Van Halen, you know, so Yeah, I'd say yeah, but I don't know. It's hard to say. Like I don't. Well, did Motley Crue, so I had pretty much every Motley Crue album there was. So yeah, I guess so.
I've done one-offs and like a week at a time or something with Sammy. You know, Matt, you and I don't think you and I ever worked for Sammy at the same time.
No.
Did we?
I don't think so.
New Orleans shows or anything like that? Did a couple of crazy. No,
there's always a revolving door there. You know, it's not like a committed crew because he plays so sporadically. You know, like right. Everybody's got other things going on.
Right. You know, so Sammy opened for Aerosmith back in 2015, 2010, one of those. And it was spectacular. What an awesome combination of artists, man.
Sure.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it was great. And so it turns out they're like Kenny Jensen in Sammy's camp is a guy that I knew from the Bill Graham days in San Francisco. One thing led to another, and I got asked to sit in with Sam for a while and did quite a few shows with him. And there was the first night he came in for soundcheck, and I'm, you know, coming in cold, and I, you know, I know the songs, I'm excited. It's all good. And he says, okay, so what we're going to do is I'm going to sit down on the edge of the drum riser here with my lap steel on my lap, and I'm going to do the intro to Bad Motor Scooter. And then I'm going to stand up and I'm going to throw that thing to you. And I'm going to start singing the song. And I said, hang on a minute. Is that the same lap steel that I saw you play that song on in 1979 at the San Jose Center for the Performing Arts? And he went, yeah. And I said, well, I don't mean to be a killjoy here, but you're not throwing that shit to me. I'm going to come get it from you because you're going to throw it to me and it's going to go right over my head. And that's going to be it for me. You know, that's going to be your lap steel just went over my head. And I'm the guy that was responsible for crushing it. So he thought that was hilarious. So every night he would pretend like he was going to throw it to me. And I'd come out and I'd gingerly take it away and, you know, treat it as a new, you know, a newborn babe. But that was pretty funny. He thought that was pretty funny because I had that emotional history with that particular instrument.
Yeah.
It was pretty neat.
It's very neat. I like it. So what was your first tour?
Mine?
Yeah.
So like Matt, and he said the magic number of $50 earlier. Oh. So I was working in Silicon Valley for a high-tech startup in 1984. And I had been playing in bands, local bands, you know, playing the local bar circuit in on the peninsula, San Jose area, Palo Alto, San Francisco on down, basically, but really couldn't break into it like some of these other folks could.
What was your band name?
Ooh, a lot of bad ones. A lot of bad ones. One was Power Source, where we all wore 3/4 sleeve, blue and white pinstripe 80s with a, you know, wide cut neck on them and all that shit.
Okay.
You should have Power Company shirts on.
Yeah. Parachute pants and all that. Literally parachute pants.
Oh, man. Okay.
So, but we were doing some great gigs. We were opening for like Y&T at the Keystone in Palo Alto and Huey Lewis in the News and some of these others, you know, I mean, really, really cool gigs. But by day, I was a high tech solder smoke breathing, electronic geek basically. And I picked up BAM magazine. BAM magazine, if either of you are familiar with it, was a newspaper style rag in the Bay Area that had everything and everything about music in the Bay Area. And they had classifieds in the back. And I'd always peruse those. I bought a guitar that way once. And I saw this tiny ad that said the Eric Martin Band is looking for a guitar roadie. Call this guy Zeke Clark and a phone number. And I remember seeing Eric in the band back then. This was, you know, post 415 days, but Sucker for a Pretty Face was the song on his self-titled record. And Don't Stop was another popular toe tapper. And so I called this number a bunch of times and never got a call back and didn't realize that what I was calling was a payphone in the house that Zeke and Eric and Mark Ross and some of the other guys all shared in Petaluma.
Okay.
So I started doing some digging. I got rather tenacious, and I ended up going to Sandy Einstein, who at the time managed Eric, called his office and just hammered him until he finally called me back and said, I'm going to have Zeke call you. And I know it was just to shut me up. And Zeke called me, and I got hired as the Eric Martin Band's guitar roadie for $50 a show. And I quit my job in high tech, and I started driving this big old white piece of shit bobtail with Zeke, and it was just the two of us. And that was April of 1984.
That's cool.
And never really looked back, you know. And Eric broke the band up about 8 months later, and Zeke and I jumped right into working for a band called Billy Satellite, based in Oakland. We went out and opened the Night Ranger Midnight Madness tour in 1984.
And that was a national tour. So that was off to the races after that. Yeah.
And it was on, you know, it was on from that point forward. So
very cool. I like it. Okay. So let's try to, when I'm sober enough to remember, I try to ask every guest the question. So my friend has a daughter in fifth grade, and her little girlfriends knew I was going to do a podcast. So they said, well, you need to ask all your guests when they first felt famous. So bear in mind, we're talking a fifth grader. So to make it a little bit more broad would be, when was the first time you felt good about yourself? You felt famous. You felt like you were a celebrity. You just felt like you were on a proper career. There was something cool about what was going on. A moment in time that makes you smile.
I never really felt famous, but I often felt cool hanging around all the, you know, rubbing elbows with all the famous people, like especially when we would go to award shows or whatever, you know, something of that nature. You know, I could say, oh, this person was right next to me, or that person was right next to me, you know. And then as far as this successful thing, you know, like whenever the bank account was working and I was buying a house and buying a car and stuff like that, you know, and, you know, able to stand on my own 2 feet and, you know, kind of do what I want to do and say no to what I don't want to do, you know.
So having your own, just out of interest, so are you an only kid or do you have brothers and sisters? Or
I am an only child, yes.
Oh, no kidding. I was expecting you to say the opposite.
No.
Well, so what made you...
I do. And I say that because I'm adopted and I met my biological side of the family and I do have a brother and sister, but I didn't want to interrupt what they had going on and all that good stuff. So we kind of keep it casual to like, you know, holidays and stuff. Hey, how you been? Oh, I'm good. You good? Cool. Good to see you.
Yeah. I thought it would have been different just because of, I think you have to have an innate drive to be successful, at least monetarily, obviously, is getting those paychecks to buy your house and your car and your guitar and stuff. And if you were into your cars, because you're a mechanic, I assume you have a couple toys. So, you know, what was your drive, do you think?
I still to this day, I really love doing what I do. Like, I love walking up to a console, like, no matter what the gig is, and there's a big pile of whatever in front of me, and doors are at 6 and I got to make this fucking shit look as good as it can before doors. I love that challenge. I love the technology behind it. I love that it's always evolving. There's always something new to learn. And, you know, I'm a technology geek that way and it keeps me on my toes. And like I said, for some reason, I've just always understood it. Like it's always just, you know, made sense to me.
What cars do you have? Do you have any toy or?
Well, my car that I drive is a 96 Impala Supersport that I've done quite a bit to, but probably the craziest thing I've done to it is, so it's an automatic transmission car. And because it's so heavy, that's the weak link of the car. And it's always been known, you know, you're going to blow out a transmission every, you know, 40, 50,000 miles. So I kind of started researching. I'm like, okay, it's got an LT1 in it and I could bolt up a T56 six-speed manual out of a 93 Camaro Z28 Camaro to it. So I went, like 1 year I was lighting the the Mecum auto auction down in West Palm Beach, and they had like a big, huge yard where people were just selling their stuff. And a guy had a transmission out of a 93 Chevy Z28.
Oh, like, meant to be.
I'll take that. And over the course of a weekend, I pulled out my old transmission that was slipping in the higher gears and put in this 6-speed manual. And people are like, you did what? And it just worked, and it still works, and it's been bulletproof, and it's been great. And like the funniest thing is, like, whenever I have to go somewhere to meet somebody for drinks or whatever, and like I like in Orlando, we've got a gazillion hotels. So like I've met friends at the Four Seasons Hotel over at Disney or whatever, and you have to valet no matter what. There's no parking. So I flipped the guy my keys, and the guy drove it off just fine. But whenever, you know, a couple hours later, whenever I come back with my ticket, I'm like, hey, here you go. And then everybody that I was with is getting their cars, and I'm still waiting. I'm like, what the fuck's going on? And I find the guy, I'm like, hey, what's going on? I was like, we're sorry, sir. Nobody knows how to drive a stick here.
I knew you were going to say that. I used to have, so I the same sort of stuff. You know, I'll give you the money, but can I park my own car? And they never want you to do it. But I'm like, I don't want you to fuck my car up.
Now, I will say this, though.
Yeah.
So I've been a gearhead forever. I used to work at a Cadillac dealership in Jacksonville, turning wrenches, fixing transmissions and all that stuff. I love every bit of that. I'm all about it. But a couple of years back, I bought my wife a Tesla. And
oh, they're fun.
1,000% drinking that Kool-Aid. It is. It makes every other car look stupid. Like, why in the world are we still doing it this way when there's this way?
They're really fun to drive. It's like a go-kart for adults. I don't know. I loved it when I drove one.
Yeah, I already have a deposit down on the Cybertruck. I can't wait for them to start making it. I'm all about it.
Cool.
Plus, cool. My neighbors are going to hate it.
It always helps.
Yeah.
Yeah, my father was Sterling Moss's pit boss for Jaguar's racing team.
Oh, wow.
So he was like heavy hitter, like my whole childhood was nuts cars, just crazy cars always. So it's in the blood, I guess you could say. It's in the blood.
Yeah.
I had a Galaxy 500 from 1965. That's about all I can say.
Ooh, that's beautiful.
All you can say, that's a great car.
Wish I still had it.
I've got a few of the wish I still had. I had a 59 356 Porsche I sold for $3,000. Yeah. I had a 74 911 I sold for $5,000. Oops.
Yeah, but anyway, I mean, how do you know?
You know? You know what, man? It's all good. Honestly, the one if you put the money aside, the one I miss a lot was an 86 Toyota pickup truck because the front was primer and I built it myself. I put it back together myself. And I would love to have that piece of shit truck. More than even the other ones, if we're not thinking of money. I love that piece of crap because I put it together. And when you do, you're looking like it's literally tin cans. It's such garbage. But that thing, man, was unbreakable. What a great vehicle. What about you, Aiden? When's your moment to shine?
Wow. I've been blessed in a couple of ways over the course of my career. Always wanting my goal was always to play music as a career. You know, I was going to be.
And that's guitar or?
Guitar and bass now, as it turns out. But that was my goal. And in our business, you kind of need to, you have to be careful because there are a lot of guys that do what we do because they want to play. And they're not doing it because they either enjoy doing it or have gotten really good at it or for any number of reasons. They always have in the back of their head, well, I'd rather be playing. You know, I'd rather be on stage than on the side of the stage or behind the stage. And guys, you can get a reputation pretty quickly. We all know that. You know, I mean, it's just, and there are guys, unfortunately, in our business that have adopted that tack. I always tried not to. I always tried to focus my energy one way or the other, and always knew that I wanted to play. And I got the opportunity finally when I was hired by Eddie Money to play in his band back in the early 90s. And Eddie was another. So, you know, back to the Cow Palace in San Francisco, 1977, Eddie Money on stage. Baby Hold On To Me is on the radio, you know, for the first time. And I'm sitting, you know, leaning on the barricade, watching this guy spin the tambourine and play saxophone really badly. But he had a thing. And I thought to myself, this is the kind of music, this, you know, Americana rock music, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
This is the kind of music that I like. This is what I like to play.
Yeah.
And, you know, fast forward, you know, 20 years or whatever. And all of a sudden I get a gig playing with him. And that was one of my aha moments. And it was,
it's great.
It was purely, it was a kind of a self-fulfillment moment more than anything else. There were a few instances along the way where I had to kind of stop for a minute and go, did Rich Williams from Kansas really just ask me to take a picture with him? You know,
yeah,
that kind of thing, which he did. And we had a great laugh over it. You know, I've really been lucky in that regard, but I really enjoy what I do as a tech. I really enjoy, it doesn't matter playing or working for somebody else who plays for me. I get the same level of enjoyment, the same level of fulfillment from it. And
do you still have your same guitar from that band where you're wearing the stripes?
Yeah. I've got all my old guitars. Yeah.
Love
my mom and dad bought me, a copy of a Gibson Les Paul because they couldn't afford a real Gibson Les Paul custom back in 1976 because of the guitar on the cover of Frampton Comes Alive. And then fast forward to 2015, and now I'm handing Peter Frampton that guitar.
Yeah,
it's feel like we do. Magic moment, right?
Oh yeah, it's amazing.
So I've been blessed in that regard. I've had a couple of those pinch me moments over the course of my career. You know, when somebody, Tommy Shaw, let's say from Styx, walks into a room and walks up to me and says, "Hi, Aiden, how's it going? Good to see you." You know, and he actually remembered me. You know, and he was one of my favorite guitar players back in the 70s and early 80s, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I love what I do. And like Matt, same thing, you know, we're two peas in a pod when it comes to that. We see it going on. We hear it going on. We immerse ourselves in it and we enjoy it.
Matt's pod is on Nitro, by the way. His pea pod. Gotta explain it. Was that a bad one? Didn't make sense, huh?
Well, if you saw the rest of my house, you'd understand why this little corner of the house is, you know, so crazy, because, you know, my wife has done all the decorating out there. And this,
I don't get a corner of the house.
Half of dining rooms that you're never supposed to walk into except for like Thanksgiving and whatnot. I'm putting up doors right here. This is my fucking end of the house. I'm doing whatever the fuck I want with it.
Yep.
Yeah, I did a movie after I stopped touring and I had a whole bunch of musicians in it. And Josh Todd from Buck Cherry was in my film. So I had to have a meeting with him, or I didn't have to, but he asked me to meet with him. So I went to his house and it's this little white picket fence. It's this nice little house. And you walk in and everything was all dainty. And I look at him and he goes, "Shut the fuck up and sit down." I didn't say a single word. And we sit down at the table. She goes, "Would you like some tea?" His wife, she's such a nice lady. And she said, "Would you like some tea?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, I'm English. Yeah, I'd love tea." So she gives me tea and it comes in a little English cup. And I'm sitting there like, "Come on, Josh, seriously, what the fuck? I told you, shut the fuck up. I told you. And it was, the conversation was in your movie, "I'm called Drunk Guy." Yeah. "I want to be called Hutch." "Okay. All right. Okay." And that was it. That was our big conversation. But it was funny.
Real. It wasn't a windup, huh?
That's his house. Yeah, his house was, I mean, at the time, we're talking a while back, but it was this very cute little house. And you look at him, he's tattooed head to toe. He's a singer of Buck Cherry. He was a great guy. I really enjoyed his company. We hung out.
I had a similar experience with them. It was, or all of them, really. It was kind of odd. So, like, they were on one of the Disturbed tours or whatever, opening up. I'm like, "Fuck yeah, man, Buck Cherry's going to be here. I'm going to have a drink with those guys. They're a fucking killer, you know?" And somehow, you know, make my way onto their bus and everything. And they're like, you know, having like a wine and cheese tasting. I'm like, "This is not all lit up. I'm on the plane with cocaine. What the fuck is going on here?"
Yeah, with him, I would be like, so, because he's drunk guy at bars. So I'm like, I washed these out with water myself. And he'd be like, oh, okay, that's cool. You thank you, man, because, you know, he doesn't drink. So, but the them, you know, I say like greatest frontmen that I've personally seen, Josh is one of them. When he did Lit Up, it was amazing. It was so, yeah. So I was there with his wife and his mom, his parents, and we were on Sunset, and he's doing the song. He goes, okay, slow it down. And I love that, because then I know it's going to be really good. We're going to get into this. And he's like, so I remember when I first moved here, and he's like, you know, I fucked a chick in the kitchen. You know, and I'm looking at his wife and he goes, and then I fucked a chick on the roof of this fucking place, you know, and he goes, and you know, blah, 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 blah. And he's going to think, but you know what I miss? I miss so much. I miss more than any of that shit. I miss the fucking cocaine. And they go right back into the song and you're like, that was amazing. And it was so, so very good. He is a master at his craft. And I love Buck Cherry. They're great.
I think those guys really cashed in on that song with the crazy bitch on it, because I believe that like all the record companies passed on it and they put it out themselves or something, and then it, you know, caught fire. And really? I think that they like really cashed in on that.
I hope awesome. You're right, they deserve it. I really hope that's true, because he had solo albums that he would release himself. They kick mm-hmm. ass too, by the way. They're amazing.
Yeah. So,
something Lovely Bones. Lovely Bones is on his solo album. It's a beautiful song. It's amazing. So I'm a fan. I like all those guys. And I guess that's what keeps us going. All right. I do have one last question for you. I forgot to bring up. So I was looking on your Facebook, and the wedding ring thing is fucking great. So so what happened here? You wrote to them and you told them, or tell Aiden. Do you know this story? Do you know what I'm talking about, Aiden?
No,
this okay, is, so, I found it very entertaining. So,
I'm lucky enough that I live on a lake behind my house, and me and the kids are always wakeboarding or tubing or whatever back there. And I have a bad habit of my wedding ring just flies off. You know, like I would always buy these like $90 tungsten wedding rings, 'cause I'm always picking up a light or something. I don't want anything to get scratched. So I bought these, you know, I don't want to say expensive, but you know, $90 wedding rings. And I've gone through like three of them. And then, you know, let's rewind to back early May. My brother-in-law was getting married. So gives us like a 2-week notice that he's getting married. And he's up in Alaska. And my wife's like, oh, what should we do? I'm like, I'm just going to leave that up to you. I'm not going to be the one that says we can't go. Thinking she would never fucking buy a ticket to go to Alaska within 2 weeks. She did. So we drug the family up there. And we're in this little gift shop, you know, buying stupid shirts for friends that say, I was in Alaska, here's a moose or whatever. And they had these crappy 99-cent rings that looked just like the tungsten wedding band that I would always wear. So as a joke, I'm like, I'll take one of those. Why not? You know, expecting it to make my finger turn green. And it didn't. It was like, and it fit perfect. It's great. And then I was at a Sammy Hagar show. You know, we did like a two-week run. And during the walk-in music or whatever, there was a song that was playing that was good. I was tapping my finger on a handrail, and then it exploded because it's a cheap 99-cent ring. So I'm like, I'm going to call that place and see if they'll send me some. I want to buy 25 of them. And after I convinced the lady that I was not kidding, I told her the story. Well, I'll show you. Here's what they sent me.
This is coming back to me now. That's one of those. I remember now.
I think it's great.
So here's what like $39 with shipping included bought me.
Yeah.
So now I can break as many as I want. I can lose as many as I want, and I'm set for a long time.
Fucking genius.
As you can Rody, follow, that one right there.
Fit. Rody Ingenuity right there.
Ingenuity. Yeah. There you go. I got it finally. Ingenuity. I think I have something you might dig.
Let me look here.
That's great, Matt. That's making it work right there, man.
Yeah, I mean, because like the place that I bought my other rings in the mall there had closed. I'm like, oh, geez, where am I going to go find a ring or whatever? You know, it's like, and my wife's cool. She didn't give me any grief about it. You know, I was like, it's all good. Man,
you're only as good as your backup, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm turning 50 in a couple of weeks, and people have been giving me grief about it. So like whenever my wife's around, I'm like, you're only as young as the women you feel.
She's like, shut up.
Take that.
Yep.
All right, here we go.
Okay. Look at that.
Oh, very nice.
That's old school.
Ah, that's my birthday.
Is it?
Yeah.
Hey.
It was, and I wasn't there.
No, I was hoping it'd be a San Francisco man.
What year is that from, Joel?
No, I don't know. I was hoping it would say so, and then we'd have a laugh. But it's old, man. This is
early 70s, maybe even late 60s.
I was thinking early 70s. I could look it up and let you know.
Crazy. Look at that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Oh, here you go. Here's a real old one.
Yeah, man.
Damn.
Yeah, those are that's what I was talking about earlier, is, you know, those posters and again, the Fillmore posters, and just seeing the talent, the unbelievable talent from back then three, four, five, six bands on in a night, you know, and nobody complained. There you go.
Yeah, that room upstairs in the back of the San Francisco Fillmore with posters, you know, butted up against each other all the way around, you're just...
Yep.
I mean, you could spend hours in there going, holy shit, I'd love to see that show.
Yeah. And they all happened there, man. Amazing stuff. Just amazing stuff. It was
sold recently. I had it was a Buddy Holly show. It was one of the last few that he did. And that was a cool, I have one up there. It's Hank Williams from 1930 something.
Wow.
Yeah, they're cool. I like the posters.
Yes.
But honestly, I like the ones you're talking about with all the crazy psychedelic-y type stuff.
Yeah, the artwork is great on those.
Oh, it's really neat. They're just fun. They're fun. Yeah, they're cool. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys. I appreciate the wedding band story. I don't know. I think it's great. I think it's hilarious. It's just replaceable. It's good.
I've always got something ridiculous like that going on.
Yeah. Good. Keeps you alive, right?
It does. Makes my kids laugh.
That's important. A little bit of laughter don't hurt.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Goes a long way. Guys, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I look forward to talking to both of you guys.
Together.
Absolutely.
And of course, always good seeing you, man.
Likewise. Likewise. I guess we'll see each other here soon, huh?
I think so. I don't know. I'm doing
August? Are we doing staying together?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I know that Mike Cooper, who was LD in that, is doing Kiss. So I don't know where it's all going to shuffle into, but
I haven't gotten that call yet. Yeah. I know that Mike has asked me to do it, and that's about all I know at this point, you know.
Yeah.
I know that it's happening, and that's about it.
Yep.
So we'll see what happens. I hope so.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, you know, I've been around those guys ever since my Three Doors Down days. So yeah, it all works out well.
I used to love Three Doors Down. I think I put in my book, like, the most boobs at any show ever was Three Doors Down.
That was, I guess you could say that was like my first real tour, you know. And what was great is I kind of got to come up with those guys. I came on board with after their... for the start of their second album. And we went to theaters, you know, which I could handle. And then shortly after that, we were in arenas. So I kind of got to ramp up easily, but you know, I was again thrown in the deep end, and it was a good time.
I forget who there was one guy who died. He did a lot of drugs and stuff. Was that the guitar player guy?
Yeah. Matt Roberts, the stage left guitar player. He, and sadly, so like, I'm good friends with all those guys, and I was with those guys for like 8 years. And I think in that entire time I was with them, I probably talked to that guy for like maybe two sentences, you know.
He was nuts.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't like batshit crazy on drugs. He was just like lethargic on drugs. And like, he'd get up there, play music, and then just gone.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a shame. I don't know. He was the only one I tried to avoid. I thought he was nutty, but the rest of the guys I liked a lot. It's not good to say the guy died, but there was one guy in the group who would hang out all day. He would just hang out, and he was cool. He was such a nice guy.
He's probably the bass player, Todd.
I think you're right. I think you are. And he was cool. So it's nice when the band guys are chilling. And remember we did with Violent Femmes, which I love.
Wow, nice.
And the bass player hung out and chatting all day. And so, I'm just looking at the show and everything. And I'm kind of like, I'm hanging out with the bass player, the Violent Femmes. I love your band.
He had something going on, the bass player from Three Doors Down. He had something going on with Debbie Harry for a little while. And for some reason, he gave her my phone number to get in touch with him. So I was getting calls from Debbie Harry going, hey, this is Deborah. Is Todd around? I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? This is
crazy. Yeah, they're great. I have their music on my list. I like listening to them. I think they're really good.
Yeah, right now they're doing a 20th anniversary of their first album. And I'm kind of hoping in a few years they do a 20th anniversary of their second album, because I'd take another little run with them just for nostalgia, you know?
Yeah. That was good music.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay. I'm sure you need to pack.
I could stand doing some of that. I got to wash some clothes first. You guys, thank you. I appreciate it.
Cool.
Great being part of it. And
it was a good hang.
Maybe we can pick up for a part two at some point.
Hey, thanks for watching Party Like a Rockstar. If you're not already subscribed to the Facebook or YouTube channels, do it. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. The handle is Party of Stars. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.